With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And it's your regular Thursday club with me today, Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Fulham's writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler.
Hey, Sammy, how you doing?
Good, thank you. Lots to discuss in this podcast. The final word from Saturday's 3-0 defeat to Man City. We'll gloss over that and look forward to bigger and better things against Leeds United on Friday, a massive game, the final match before the international break. And then in part two, lots to get through. We're going to be discussing our favourite Fulham goals from a technical point of view. I'll give you the reasons for that later. And we're also going to discuss Jerome Opoku following Peter's piece in The Athletic, which you can read now for 40% off your regular subscription, just £3.99 a month. If you want to get all of Peter's amazing articles, plus the Fulhamish podcast advert-free, you can do that right now by going to theathletic.com/Fulham pod. Once again, that's theathletic.com/Fulham pod. And one other thing that you would have been able to get had you subscribed, but it's a little bit too late now, was access to Peter's Fulham quiz last night, which took place. I was in attendance. He hosted it with Justin Guthrie, who's one of the sub-editors at The Athletic and a big Fulham fan. It was fantastically done, Peter. I really enjoyed myself. A half-time Q&A from none other than Sean Davis as well. Did you enjoy hosting the quiz?
No, absolutely not. I'll leave all the hosting to you and Jack, and it's not a natural environment for me. I was glad it when it was done. But Sean was good value at half time. He was really good. It was a nice, easy chat with him, and some good questions. I thought my questions would be trickier, and then I realised they may have been a bit too easy, and now I'm not really too sure. But all the questions are going up tomorrow.
I wouldn't take Sammy's word for it, because like Sammy didn't support Fulham until he was 24. So like,
give it a rest, mate. I'm going to give you a pass because it's Paddy's Day and I don't want to be mean to you on your special day. But any other day, I'd rip into you right there. Peter, I thought what we could do, I actually thought there were some tricky questions there last night. I really did. I came about mid-table in the end. I had a terrible start and managed to redeem myself towards the end. Farrell, who you'll know from the podcast, came third in the end, which was a very impressive performance. Could you give us three of your trickiest questions? This is a twofold challenge. One, I want to see how Jack does. Two, I thought people listening could see how they do. And at the end of the podcast, if you stick all the way to the end, you can give the answers and maybe people can tweet in with how many out of three they got.
Yeah, we'll do that. And then we'll also do like a, you know, when they do the match of the day on the news late, and like if you want to walk out so you don't hear the answers, you can do that, because we'll publish the whole thing tomorrow. So if you don't want the spoilers, we'll mix it up.
Okay.
Right, let's pick three questions for Jack. Okay, let's do one from the first round. So the first round was name the club that the Fulham player played for.
I hated this round. This was a horrible round for me.
Yeah, you didn't do very well on that, Sammy. We couldn't really find you on the leaderboard after that round. So this one is Scott Parker. So his first club was Charlton. Mm-hmm. And then he went on loan somewhere. Then he went to Chelsea, Newcastle, West Ham, Tottenham and Fulham. Yeah. So what club did Scott Parker go on loan to from Charlton? And you have three options: Norwich, Millwall.
I just want to let you know that I know the answer. So it's, I don't actually need the options, but I'll let you give it for all the listeners.
He did actually shout it out, but we have now re-recorded. And the final option is Gillingham. So Norwich, Millwall or Gillingham.
Yeah, that okay, one. That's question one.
Okay.
I didn't get that one and it really annoyed me.
You surprised me, Sammy. Right. Okay. How many Americans have played for Fulham in the Premier League? Is it 6, 8, or 11?
Yep.
Okay, and...
I'm trying to get a pen that works so I can make sure I don't... Yeah, okay, we're good. We're good.
Okay, and then in the third round, it was who scored. So there were a load of 1-0 wins for Fulham, and you had to name the goal scorer. So this one was Fulham 1, Igalio Athens 0, the Intertoto Cup third round, the 25th of July 2002. Who scored for Fulham? Was it Facundo Sava, Steve Marley, or Louis Saha?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Do you know that one, Jack?
Good question. Yeah, I have a DVD of that year.
Oh, wow.
There's an entire run.
I think Jack missed the trick by not turning up last night. He had other commitments because other football was playing.
The old Champions was on, unfortunately.
I actually think Jack would have stood a very good chance of winning last night. I think he could have given Jeff Bruce, who works for the club and did win it, a run for his money. So we'll give those answers at the end of the podcast. And it was all for a very good cause as well. It's all to support Prostate Cancer UK. And we raised some money for them, of course. And that's very nice. And if you take part in Peter's quiz, which is going to be published, I'm sure they'll give details on how you can donate to that very worthy cause. Okay, let's do the final word then from City on Saturday, Jack. And I just want to kind of come on to the importance. And I think there was a bit of debate amongst Fulham fans online, with some people understandably being annoyed by what happened on Saturday and downbeat, and particularly given the results that really went against us on Sunday, particularly Brighton's win at Southampton. And a lot of other people just saying, like, get a grip. This is Man City. You can't be annoyed. So what were your feelings after the weekend?
Look, I think there's two sides to this. One, you look at Man City and they're an exquisite team who have lost once in recent memory, right? And in that weird loss to United where, as in the preview show, we said they could have come out on top and no one would batted an eyelid. They are top of the Premier League by some distance. They are cruising in four competitions. And currently, I think that they're the best side in Europe, if not the world. So to lose to them is no huge issue, right? To lose to Man City is not in itself anywhere near a negative. I think you can, however, still pick out Fulham's individual errors and say these aren't great. And I think the fact that Fulham switched off after half time were punished from a dubious free kick, should we say? Let's be honest. The fact that we switched off, we kept the line so aggressively high and allowed John Stones to ghost in. The fact that we played ourselves into trouble, for the second goal. You can look at those and say those individual errors are still bad. It doesn't, just because it's Man City, doesn't mitigate the fact that Fulham have really played themselves into trouble in both situations there, I think, and have really let themselves get overwhelmed by a side. Because, we talked about this in the preview. You said if you want to get anything out of Man City, you have to be perfect for 90 minutes. And in the first half, I thought Fulham were close to perfect in how you play against Man City, in the way that we kept them at arm's length. We played some really nice stuff ourselves, created, looked to get our foot on the ball when we did have the ball, and saw off sustained periods of pressure. And then you compare that to the second half, where we just had these sort of mini implosions that kind of kept going and going and going. And, the same goes for the penalty, which is really silly in many ways. So I think you can both say that, yes, it's City and you shouldn't take it too aggressively, harshly in the wider context of the season, and also say Fulham still needs to cut out silly mistakes. It doesn't matter if it's against City or against a relegation rival or against Leeds United this Friday. If you make those kind of mistakes, people are going to punish you. So they don't change just because of the opposition. That would be my take. The result itself, fine. Not a problem. Fulham just need to get back to not committing silly errors, because that's not something we've seen in this run of increased expectation in improved performances. They're things that we've managed to cut out, and to see them kind of slip back into the game is slightly worrying, even if it is against City.
Peter, what was the mood after the match? Obviously, you'll have spoken to Scott. He won't have been as jubilant as he was after the game against Liverpool. I would also quite like to know whether the jacket was brought up, or was it not the time or the place?
Unsurprisingly, the jacket was not brought up after a 3-0 home defeat. It seemed a better fit this week, I thought. Maybe there was a gilet was gone. I couldn't really tell from my side of the ground. But anyway, in terms of the mood, yeah, I think frustration as much as there was sort of disappointment. I mean, normally, as Jack was saying, you'd probably sort of bat the result away because of who City are and the way they're playing. But the nature of the goals, you could tell, didn't really sit well with Scott. And Scott will always be quite open with how he thinks. He doesn't really hold anything back. He called them poor, sloppy, which were quite strong words. And, you know, I think they were kind of merited. And it's all really about how you sort of perceived the game. Not how you perceived the game, sorry. It's all about perspective, really, because Fulham played well enough in that game, if you take away that 15-minute sort of horror spell, to have probably merited a point at least. And that's probably why it was more disappointing and why it's more frustrating. So in a weird way, it's a positive that it was disappointing because Fulham had played to that standard. Now, of course, as Jack was saying, those errors were really uncharacteristic. They cost the game, really. You just have to hope that it's an isolated thing. Of course, it's Manchester City. The pressure's on. You have to concentrate so much harder, probably, than you would on your average game in terms of the intensity they play at, how intricate they are. I mean, the system that Guardiola deployed was completely unexpected, I think, for most Manchester City observers, as much as for the Fulham team and from a Fulham side, with the back three and real out-and-out wing-backs. So there was a lot more intensity to the game. I liked the way Fulham played. I liked the sort of the man marking that Scott Parker sort of asked his midfielders to do with Anguissa just sitting on Rodri for most of the time, and then Harrison Reed picking up. I think Aguero would drop deep, and then Lamina would be on Bernardo Silva, and they sort of swapped. At times, you'd end up with Ivan Cavallero swapping from left back because he was marking Cancelo and ending up on the right hand side, and then Lookman would come across, and Loftus-Cheek was floating everywhere, and then Reed would end up on the right. And you know, it was a very, very fluid system dealing with a very difficult challenge in City. And that first half, it worked quite well, I felt. And as Jack was saying, there was a threat. But as it transpired, it ends up with a 3-0 defeat. I think to take away from it, it's probably the fact that Fulham still got 3 points from probably one of the hardest weeks of the season, which is hugely impressive. And we just sort of move on from it and go again with these more important games coming up. And just making sure that those errors are not reoccurring down the line.
Onwards and upwards then to the challenge of Leeds United on Friday. Jack, first of all, nice to be playing on a Friday night again. It was very much a home from home for Fulham last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, we did enjoy a Friday night kickoff, especially when we could go to games. But it has eluded us a little bit this thus far, and yeah, I'm glad that we can see ourselves playing on a Friday night. Also, it's one of those ones where Fulham win on a Friday night, and I know that's a little bit, you know, presumptuous, yeah, maybe. But if Fulham do win on a Friday night, it puts it, you know, the rest of the weekend is great, bliss, isn't it? Yeah. You know, the rest of the weekend, you sort of floats by and all the different things don't affect you quite as much, and you don't worry about what the other teams are doing. Obviously, you still keep an eye on it, but you're no longer stressing about what's going on. And I think that in itself is a huge opportunity for Fulham. Obviously, not for the Fulham players, but for the fans in terms of, and the players will know that it means the world to the fans to win on a Friday night. So fingers crossed we can get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. We're facing Leeds, and look, we've got a big history of facing them in the last couple of years, Jack. It's an interesting one with Leeds, of course, coming to the capital. They still haven't got over their London curse, which Fulham very much have as well, especially in the Premier League, but they haven't won a game in the capital since December 2017. That's over 20 away games in the capital since they've won. I'd imagine they'll be quite keen to get that monkey off their back, if little else, because there's not a lot left in the season for Leeds other than kind of seeing it through to the end and just getting the few wins that they need in order to keep them mid-table. But they've had a great season. But there's certainly hope for Fulham of getting 3 points in this match.
Yeah, I spoke to John McKenzie about this week, who's obviously a Leeds fan for his pod, All Stats, Aren't We? And I said, is there a chance you'll be on the beach? More in hope than expectation, I think. And actually, the response was, I don't think you can ever be on the beach with Marcelo Bielsa at the helm, which is probably fair enough in general terms. But it was one of those where, you know, you really hope that Leeds might have just eased off a little bit. I think they're too far away to be in the relegation scrap. Their performances have dropped off of late. I think, you know, a lot of people will look at that point against Chelsea and think, or resurgent Chelsea, and say, oh, they might be a team coming into this with a little bit of form. But I think the potential that Patrick Bamford might be missing is a huge one for us. I know he divides opinion in various ways, but I do think he's crucial for the way that this Leeds side work. And I don't think Rodrigo Moreno, as good a player as he is, has quite got to speed with exactly what Bielsa wants from his forward yet, and hasn't quite fulfilled the role that's expected of him. And so I think this is an opportunity in many ways. There are obviously plenty of exceptionally talented players in this squad, notably Rafinha, who is a Champions League player kicking around for Leeds, and he is genuinely that good. So, you know, it's not going to be easy by any stretch, but you do hope that the fact that this game is huge for Fulham and is big but not massive for Leeds would work in our favour, and hopefully the hoodoo can therefore continue.
I look at Leeds, Pete, and I think that if Fulham hadn't just had such a cataclysmic start to the season, we wouldn't be miles behind them, would we? I don't look at Fulham and look at Leeds and think there's a massive difference now in terms of the quality of the teams. But of course, Leeds sit pretty in 12, 10 points above us, and we sit in 18th. I just never thought there's a massive gap between the two sides. And I think we worried last season about Parker versus Bielsa, because I think we thought that Parker would be completely out of his depth against someone with the quality of Marcelo. And now I don't actually think that it's as big a gulf as it maybe once was feared to be.
No, I don't think it is as big. I think that's a fair point. It's 10 points at the moment, obviously. But you do think back to the start of the season, and we've said it time and again that Fulham are sort of playing a 33-game season, because of, if you consider it to be a false start. But in terms of how they're playing, in terms of results, I think there's a similar reception also outside of both clubs to how they're doing. I think there's both positive, you know, feelings for both in terms of playing style and entertainment value as well. Very different ways of playing. I mean, Fulham are a lot more pragmatic than Leeds, and they're very dogmatic in the way they play. You know, they have a one set style and they'll stick to it. So in that sense, yeah, there's not overly that much of a difference now. And I think the games coming up now for Fulham will probably give a nice indication of that, because obviously the games that Fulham, you know, struggled at the start of the season do correlate now with these games, you know, Leeds, Villa, Wolves, Arsenal as well. So maybe you could then see how Fulham come out of this period and then maybe hypothetically transplant it to the start of the season and say, actually, do you know what, they're not miles and miles apart. I do think Leeds are in a bit of a strange patch of form. I think they've only scored in one of the last four games, possibly one of the last five, actually. So they are struggling a little bit by their own standards. Not something you'd sort of expect from a Marcelo Bielsa team, to, especially in the final third, to be struggling in that regard. So maybe there is an opportunity there for Fulham. They, of course, will want to push back. But if Bamford can't make the game, or at least isn't 100% fit, you do sense an opportunity if you can keep Rafinha quiet. You know, he's without doubt their danger man, as Jack was saying. He's a fantastic player. And you know, it's also a bit weird because this is a game where the records, the pre-match, you know, head-to-heads and everything sort of suit Fulham more. You know, obviously you've got Leeds' terrible record in London. I think Fulham have only lost one of their last home league games against Leeds. So yeah, it's a slightly different balance to this one. And maybe this is one that's there for the taking. Now, of course, the importance of this game is massive because of Saturday and Brighton, Newcastle. You know, getting 3 points, coming out of the bottom three, just really piles on the pressure for both teams. I feel like Brighton aren't really the team Fulham are chasing. It's Newcastle. But yeah, ahead of that game, having this game on the Friday night, that's so important.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really important to say, Jack, now that this is the opportunity that Fulham can have to get out of the bottom three, even if it's just for a day. If Fulham did win, Newcastle would have to get 3 points in order to then get out of the relegation zone, which might boost Fulham in the fact that Brighton are suddenly back in danger. I think that's why this game feels so crucial. Not only is it against a side that I think Fulham know that they can beat on their day, but also the fact that that match is going on. I just think the players psychologically would be in such a good place if they get out the bottom three, even if it's just for a day.
Yeah, I think this is important, right? And something that I've kind of noted over the last couple of weeks, as the fervor has grown around this Fulham team, obviously that's always helped by beating someone like Liverpool in a game like we did. And I think the fan base feels confident in many ways that this Fulham side are going to stay up. And it's important for that to reflect onto the pitch. And I think the players are confident, and we've seen from the interviews and the discussions they've given that they're confident that they can stay up this season, they can stay in the division. But also, you know, the fact that the fan base has started to really believe that this is the case. And it almost feels now, I think, and especially to me, that if Fulham get relegated, it's a disappointment. It's a huge disappointment. It's a massive blow, despite the fact that Fulham haven't actually got out of the relegation zone yet, right? And that's weird. That's a weird kind of thing that if Fulham were now 17th, even by a point, right? And we were like, we'd be really disappointed if we went down. That seems more normal than being 18th, not having actually climbed out really at any given point and still being in there and still being like, nah, we go down, it's an absolute, you know, absolute travesty. This side is good enough to stay up, et cetera, et cetera. So like you say, to get out, I think would be a huge boost to everyone, because it would show that faith is not misplaced in some ways, if that makes sense. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in terms of it show you that this Fulham side have the caliber and the capacity to get out of that relegation zone and then hopefully to kick on and stay there. But at the moment, it feels like all of this faith and this kind of brewing sense of optimism around Fulham is still caveated by the fact that we haven't yet jumped out of these relegation places. And I think to do that, as you say, even for a day or two, would be a huge boost to morale everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Fulham have been chasing something, always been behind in a race for quite a long time, Jack, because even like last year, we were looking at the top two and we never quite made that leap. Obviously, this season we went down. I mean, it wasn't really a chase, was it? But we were always in that bottom three and looking to get out. Even the season that under Slavisa, we were in third for such a long time, hoping to make that leap into second. And I think psychologically, if this group of players can actually just go one further and actually get out and be the ones being chased at, I'd almost like to see that dynamic, because sometimes you can be comfortable, I think, in second place when it's, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? And I think that's maybe what Fulham
works
got
for Radio 1 for a little bit of time. Starts quoting Stormzy on Fulham It Podcast. Respect.
I mean, it is just generally a saying, but yeah, go for it. Like, I think that would be an interesting dynamic for Fulham to go, right, this has gone into delirium, so I think it's a good time to take a break. We've got plenty to discuss afterwards. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here, I'm joined by Peter Rutzler.
Hello.
And Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
As we edge closer to the end of the podcast, we obviously edge closer to Jack having to give out his answers for Peter's quiz. Are you feeling confident, Jack?
Yeah, I'm 100% confident that I've got 100%.
I'm really upset. I'm really upset, Peter, that we can't catch him out a little bit more. Yeah, maybe we need to...
Shall I throw him another one?
Yeah, throw me a curveball.
Okay, right.
You can answer this straight away, Jack, or you don't have to hold this to the end.
Fine, let's do
it. Okay. Let me do one from round four.
What's the round four?
So round four is about the current club.
Oh, nice.
See, round four was my best round by a mile.
Which Fulham player did work experience at Barclays Bank, age 16, and called it the worst 2 weeks of his life? Was it Bobby Decadova-Reed, Kevin McDonald, or Tom Kearney?
Ooh, good question.
I think I got this wrong.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Surely not a really, really obviously one.
Was this in one of your pieces, Peter, by the way?
No, it wasn't, actually.
Okay. I was going to think, I was feeling bad when I got it wrong. I was like, oh, I bet Peter did like a full dossier.
A few of the questions were like sort of tied, but this one was a bit more of a curveball.
I'm going to guess Tom Kearney, but it is a guess.
It is Tom Kenny, yeah. Of course it's Tom Kenny.
Unbelievable. You can tell it's Paddy's Day, can't it? That is luck of the Irish.
Luck of the Irish there in. That was, to be fair, a complete guess. I had no idea whatsoever, apart from I can only imagine Tom Kenny working in a bank and be like, this is rubbish. Like, this is absolutely awful. So that was all I got.
See, I said Deckard over Reed. I have no idea why. But
no, I reckon Bobby Deckard over Reed quite enjoyed that. Like, he's good at whatever he puts his mind to, right? Like, right wing back, right wing, centre forward, centre mid, working at Barclays Bank on network experience. Wouldn't matter. Bobby would have smashed it. Wouldn't have been the worst weeks of his life. TC, I can imagine, like, looking at that and be like, I am a languid 8/10. Like, this is not for me.
Yeah. He wanted to be nothing else but a footballer, Tom Kenny, didn't
absolutely.
He? And his lifestyle doesn't suit anything else than a footballer either. I reckon he could have been a hairdresser or a barber, couldn't he, with those locks of hair if he hadn't have made the grade as a footballer. I don't think that's an assumptive thing to say.
No, he does have it. He has a good eye for a haircut, if his own one is anything to go by.
We've been going on that it's Paddy's Day today, the 17th of March, but probably when you listen to this, it will be the 18th of March, which means it's the 11th anniversary of this.
Into who? Dempsey. Dempsey will try and chip one!
It was the 18th of March 2010, in the last 16 of the Europa League. Fulham 4, Juventus 1. The most famous of famous nights at Craven Cottage. The result that we all bring up far too much in conversation. The result that we can use when backed into a corner. We could lose to nearly every team in the land and they can say, you're shit, what have you ever won? And we can say, yeah, but have you ever beaten Juventus? On this night, Fulham had arguably their greatest ever result, their most dramatic comeback, and potentially most iconic goal all in one go. In this episode, we go back to that evening at Craven Cottage, ask whether it was the greatest game in the history of Fulham FC, and also debate whether a result of that magnitude could ever happen again.
That's right. 11 years since Fulham's famous 4-1 win over Juventus at Craven Cottage. A famous night for Fulham Football Club. And really just wanted to take an opportunity to say that our documentary that we did, which you just heard an excerpt from, which was called Unforgettable, Fulham 4, Juventus 1, available to listen now. It's just been reposted on the Athletic's Fulhamish feed if you are a subscriber to The Athletic. If not, check out our social pages and there are links to the documentary on there. If you didn't get around to listening to it last year, it's about 35 to 40 minutes. Features excerpts from Fulhamish people, from journalists, from players that played that night as well. We were very proud of it when we released it last year. So we'd just love to give it another plug to listen now. So do check out the Fulhamish socials or the Fulhamish feed on the Athletic app if you'd like to listen to that. Obviously, once you've listened to this podcast first.
Don't switch us off.
We're producing Fulham content gold right now.
I talked about this night by complete coincidence in today's Europa League breakfast.
We did
the greatest Europa League comebacks as a top five in today's one. It'll be out now on UEFA's YouTube channel. And I waxed lyrical about this. And in that waxing lyrical, I also revealed that this was the only time at a football match ever that I have found it acceptable to whip my shirt off and swing it around my head like a tattoo.
There you go. Of course you did.
I've never ever done that before or after. Just then.
Must admit, I am a virgin when it comes to whipping off my shirt in a crowd and swinging it around my head. I hope to one day reach those dizzy heights.
Yeah, I mean, look, 15-year-old me was having a great time.
Peter, if you ever got that embroiled in a football match, it's very unacceptable in the press box, but...
That would be quite something to do that in the press box.
It would be quite good crack, to be fair, if you've got someone to film it.
Yeah, I don't think I'd keep my accreditation for long.
Depends if you did it for Fulham scoring or not.
Yeah, depends on the home team.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I've never whipped my shirt off at a football game. I've done it in other crowd environments, but not a football game. But I'll leave that there.
Leave that to the imagination, I reckon. Yeah.
My mind went to some kind of like foam party in Ayanapa when Peter was like 18.
Not that, thank God.
Let's go with that.
And of course, that night, the winning goal, Clint Dempsey's memorable chip. And there was a piece, Peter, on The Athletic, which I enjoyed, which had a lot of Fulham interest in it, which was a lot of the Athletic writers talking about the best goal of the Premier League era. And what I enjoyed about this piece, Peter, is there was a lot of mentions for Paitim Kasami. I was very upset when Match of the Day did a programme last summer during lockdown where they did their top 10 Premier League goals. And Paitim Kasami didn't just not make the top 10. I'd have accepted it not making someone's subjective top 10 where there were lots of good goals. But it didn't even make the kind of like, these didn't make the cut selection. And they must have showed about like 50 to 60 Premier League goals, and somehow Paitim Kasami got left out. And it was rent-free in my head for a very long time.
Didn't you get a tweet back from Gary Lineker?
I did indeed. He was very salty about the whole thing, in all honesty. But what I wanted to come on to is it got me thinking what the greatest goal was, just Fulham, right? And I didn't really put too much stipulations on it, whether it was Premier League, whether it was Europa League, whether it was back in the Football League days in the 90s. But what I wanted to get it from was a technical point of view, because the reason this article came about was after Eric Lamela's unbelievable Rabona at the weekend for Spurs. And, you know, some good goals are good goals because of the moments that they created, right? Or they're good goals just because they brought out an emotion. But what I wanted to find out was the best kind of technical goal. Now, I think we all know that Paitim Kasami is probably up there. But there were some great shouts other than Paitim Kasami. So, Jack, I'll start with you. I just wanted to know what your input into this debate is. So the greatest Fulham goal from a technical point of view, not just raw emotion, etc.
I might have to go Simon Davies' goal against Hamburg, where he sort of flips it over the defender and then bangs it into the ground to get the lift over the keeper. I think that's probably the best technical goal I've ever seen. It helped that it was right in front of me. But the fact that, you know, the awareness to flick it over the goalkeeper, the onrushing defender, and then to use the ground to get it over the keeper instead of giving it the kind of dink over him, I thought was absolutely wonderful. And it's always gone down as one of my favourite goals in Fulham history. Sometimes I think it gets forgotten about in the kind of raw emotion of that night and the winner, because obviously it was the equalising goal and actually on its own it wouldn't have been enough. But it was just an absolutely glorious like bit of individual skill, and that would be right up there for me.
Peter, I know that obviously you've only been covering Fulham for a season, but I know that you took an opportunity to look through some of the comments that came through. Were there any that stood out to you on this?
There's a few. I mean, are we ruling out Paitim Kasami and Clint Dempsey from this discussion, or can we still use them?
You can very much use them, but yeah, they are the kind of obvious, they were the kind of go-tos.
They're the go-tos, aren't they?
That sparked my thoughts with this.
I like Simon Davis's goal against Hamburg as well. We talked about that before the pod. I did like Andre Schürrle's goal against Burnley, and I was looking through some of the older videos, and the thing I liked with Schürrle's goal is the height of the ball in which he strikes it, which is actually very, very difficult, because you know the old adage is when you're striking a ball, just get your head over it to keep it down. You know, he's managed to shift his body in such a way that he's managed to keep it under the crossbar and put it away from a sizable distance as well. So yeah, that's definitely right up there. But I mean, if we're going to sort of pick the very best, I think it has to be, for me, Dempsey's goal. And I think the thing with technique is you can't always like isolate it from occasion. You know, like what really can set it apart is being able to pull off the absolute pinnacle of your technical ability in high pressure situations or in moments that really matter. And the weight he put on the ball it was, you know, it was first time. There was no, there's no thought process there. Well, you know, he's a very much aware of his positioning. He knows where he's going to place it. He knows the keeper's positioning as well. I mean, that for me is, you know, that's leagues ahead for me.
Worth pointing out some of the answers here, Sammy, because there's some really, really good responses. I like Owen Brown, 97, with Berbatov against Stoke, which remains just one of the most iconic hits. It's the way that it drops. And he has nothing else in his head apart from this is obviously just going in, isn't it? Yeah. And I love that. And Ben at Ben_K_99 says McCormack, well, he said a load, but McCormack's chip against Bristol City, yes, which is such a great shout because he doesn't have room to chip the keeper. And I think that's maybe the best bit about this goal. It's like it was very much straight out like FIFA 14, where you could chip the keeper on the goal line a lot. And I think the McCormack's goal in that game was genuinely, like, he looked up and he was like, keeper's not really off his line, but I could still maybe dink him, and he still dinks him. And that is absolute perfection in many ways. Ross McCormack, because of the way that he left and because of all of the, you know, drama surrounding him, doesn't potentially get his place that I think he deserves in the Fulham pantheon. I genuinely think that Ross McCormack needs more credit. And without him, we would nowhere near be where we are now.
He gets in the championship, 100%. He was the only player that had anything remotely bordering on quality. Maybe that's a bit harsh on a player like Moussa Dembele or something. But yeah,
he was the only player that made things happen by himself in the pre-Tom Kearney era.
Yeah, 100%. There are some other great shouts here as well that I wanted to run through. Vincent Leander says, anyone said Collins John versus Middlesbrough? Mm-hmm. They haven't, but that is a wonderful bit of technique and certainly one of the best technical goals, I think, maybe before the kind of Kasami and Dempsey kind of took it to another stratosphere. Johnny Smith, Diamante Camara bicycle kick versus Spurs. Clean connection that looped beautifully over Paul Robinson. That was a memorable
Talking
goal.
Of bicycle kicks, actually, I didn't see if anyone put this one in, but Zoltan Gira, when he flicks it up for himself against Man United and volleys it in, that's a magnificent goal as well.
Yeah, Aaron Paul actually tweeted me to mention that one. A few other notable shouts here as well. A couple of these a bit underrated, but good goals. Ryan Tunnicliffe versus Bristol City.
Oh, yeah.
Halloween back in the championship days was a lovely little lob over the goalkeeper. And one here that definitely goes under the radar, but it was a fantastic shout. Got quite a lot of love, this suggestion from our own Farrell Monk. Nikolai Bodjarov against Derby County. A wonderful goal. A tabletop Derby County side at the time when Fulham were absolutely shite, but that was a lovely goal. Peter, have you come across the name Nikolai Bodjarov
on your travels?
On my travels, I remember Bodjarov. I do remember him, but you know, he's not a go-to. Is it a nice flashback, a nice finish as well? I mean, I wouldn't put that up there as the most technically, you know, I mean, it's a very good finish to be fair to him, but you know, I think in the group we're looking at, you know, he doesn't quite cut for me, but you know, he gets the love, you know.
There's a couple more here, Sammy, that I forgot. Stuart Roberts said Kearney's at Wolves, and actually the fact that we nearly left that out is arguably nearly criminal. Comes
we
back
mentioned,
from the free kick. Beautiful.
Have we mentioned Brian Ruiz against Bolton?
Or against
Brian
Everton.
Ruiz Everton.
Or against Everton, yeah. Right. I mean, but the Bolton one is it's such a proper scoop, isn't it? But he's not really scooped it, but he's got such a good arc on that.
Konchesky at West Ham, that absolute bullet. CJ put this one in, and he also mentions, a couple of people said this, but John Harley at Loftus Road against Aston Villa, where he just dumps it from 45 yards. But it just, I've never seen a ball. I remember being behind that goal. It's one of my very earliest football memories, actually, that. And the ball, I remember being behind it and seeing the ball just stay. It just, you know, when you used to hit it and it just would stay at a level, it was like a laser beam. It just sat and it just kept going and kept going and kept going until it was in the back of the net. And I don't think I've ever seen a ball hit that well until maybe John Arnarisa turned up at Liverpool a couple of years later. It was absolute rocket from John Harley.
Yeah, the only one about those and maybe the Paul Konchesky ones, do they count as like technique?
Yeah, maybe.
Goals?
Do they just hit it?
Are they more just like absolute twats into the corner. I'm not 100% sure. But, I mean, good goals. Enjoyed them at the time. A couple of other notable mentions as well before we finish. Josh Onuma against Cardiff got a little bit of love, which was obviously a wonderful goal at the time. Yeah, and another one that I really enjoyed was Ad said Scotty Malone versus Barnsley.
No, because that was a cross.
That was not a cross. No way is that a cross, Jack. That is a wonderful, wonderful goal.
Shawnee Cav versus Norwich.
Yeah, okay. We can tell it's Paddy's day. Right. A couple of other things going on The Athletic this week, Peter. I just wanted to give you a moment to talk about your interview with Jerome Opoku on his second loan spell away from Fulham, currently at Plymouth. And you put an article out about him yesterday. Obviously, a big bright hope for the future for Fulham. So just wanted to give you an opportunity really to give us a little bit of an insight into how that went.
Yeah, no, I caught up with Jerome, who's currently at Plymouth. It's always nice catching up with some of the younger lads who have gone out on loan into the Football League, because, you know, it's not always easy for one to actually get these loans in the first place. I think that's one of the interesting things about player development, particularly at the moment. And then also just to get his perspective, I think what was really interesting about speaking to him was, you know, how open he actually was on that path to the first team. I know it's always something that's discussed and brought up, and we've talked about it on here a few times about getting those first team minutes and opportunities. But Jerome sort of put it in the context of what it's like to be in the academy from a young age. You know, he joined Fulham at the age of 10. He's from Mitcham, so he didn't have to travel too far. But he talks about how he would, you know, talk with Dennis Adeniran, who went on to Everton, of course, and is now on loan at Wickham. And you just think, oh, yeah, I'm going to get to the first team at 17, going to make my debut and then progress from there. And just sort of how that realization changes as you go through and you see other players who maybe are a couple of years ahead of you then get into the 23s and then they can't get out on the loan or they can't get those minutes. And how that sort of completely changes your sort of perspective on the game. And he came across as a really impressive guy. You know, he's very headstrong. He knows what he wants to do and he sees those different pathways. You know, the comparison between, say, Ryan Sessegnon going straight in, but also someone like Marek Rodak or Marcus Bettinelli, who's been on a few loans and then has come back and made it to the first team. And yeah, I mean, it's always an unusual place to go, Plymouth, because the amount of traveling you have to do. He seems to be taking all of that in his stride. I mean, in terms of his season, I mean, it's been a strange one for them. They've gone on a few streaky runs. They're currently five games without a win, I think, now. When I spoke to Jeremy, just come off the back of a really good run of 9 unbeaten. So they've been quite up and down. He spent a bit of time out the team. So he talks about that and that sort of learning process. He's kicking on really, and you know, he wants to keep pushing and go up the levels. You know, last year he spent on loan at Accrington and another team a long way away, so he's certainly getting the life experience away from home.
He's getting the air miles in.
He's getting the air miles in. He's certainly getting his National Express miles in as well. it's always good to catch up with him and just see how he progresses. You know, I think for him, it's a case of now just trying to take that next step, keep getting out and playing. I mean, this summer will be interesting for him. I think he's in the latter stages of his contract, so he'll be one to be interesting to follow and see how he progresses.
Yeah, 100%. Well, if you want to read that piece, it's on The Athletic now. And as I mentioned at the top of the pod, you can get 40% off your subscription by going to theathletic.com/Fulham pod. Right. Focus back on Leeds next, as Don Betts has our opposition preview. Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Time to cross over now to Don Betts, who has our opposition preview as ever, and he's looking ahead to Friday night's clash against Leeds United. And he spoke to Colin McGilligan from the One Leeds fan channel, and they started off by speaking about what a crazy game the reverse fixture was at Elland Road earlier this season.
Yep, welcome to Leeds United, Dom. That is pretty much our entire season encapsulated in one game, to be honest. It's quite a sort of mirrored game of so many games we've had this year. And if I'm honest with you, I thought Leeds was sort of, it was to and fro really for about 20, 25 minutes. And then Leeds took control. Obviously, I think we went 4-1 up. And then I think Fulham were actually really lucky towards the end not to come out with anything. You know, Anguissa, we were all in awe of. I thought he was absolutely superb. Luckman came on and made a massive difference. And listen, Fulham were unlucky in that game, really unlucky not to come out with something. It was a brilliant game for the neutral, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember I spoke on your channel sort of just for that game, and we were speaking about how it's weird going into a second game of the season saying must win. But I mean, it was sort of with your guys' result against Liverpool at Anfield, you sort of had to back that up with performance at home, and you did that in parts. I mean, when it went 4-1, I was like, is this just going to be repeated a game we played about 2 months ago, straight after the restart? But thankfully, we got some goals. Unfortunately, we didn't get a result, but I think what some Fulham fans are looking, comparing that game to this game coming up, is that game was when we had no competent defenders in the side, and now we seem to have shored it up in the back. If we can put a similar performance in, that's where a lot of Fulham fans are getting confidence from. Another point, if we're looking sort of ahead to the game before we sort of look at your season so far, is there a reason behind your terrible, terrible form in London? Like, is there a reason behind it, or is it simply just a coincidence that you seem to always not be able to pick up a result when you come down to the capital?
Dom, it's 2 minutes in and you've mentioned it. I hoped you wouldn't mention it once, to be honest. But yeah, no, it's do you know what, Dom? It's bizarre because, for example, we'll go down to the Midlands and we've got an unbelievable record in the Midlands. It's incredible. You know, anytime we go down there, we seem to get a good result. But the big smoke, I don't know what it is.
As soon as you get below Watford, it's like, nah.
Yeah. It is a mentality thing, though. I've always said it. Me and my guest speaker on my channel, we've said it's a mentality thing. It's been since 2017 now. I think we've won once in London. It was against you, 3-0, I think, when we were terrible.
Yeah, I think it was when Sol Bamba scored, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think Sam Byram, I think you had the likes of, obviously, so the likes of Ross McCormack and stuff there. We managed to get a win. We've won once in London in since 2015, and that was the only game. It's bizarre, Dom. And I think even we played you in the Championship, didn't we? And you beat us 2-1 down there in that, with that ghost penalty that should never have been given.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's bizarre, mate. It really is. And I do think it's a mentality thing. I think we've had a lot of our existing squad has come with us to the Premier League. And it seems to have, as in what I'm talking about, is this squad's been together for a number of years now. It seems to have been a part of our mindset. So I'll be honest, Dom, the players are definitely aware of it as well. We got promoted last year, and Stuart Dallas tweeted out like something like, no wins in London, no problem. So they're all very aware of it. So that is definitely something that plays into Fulham's hands, because Leeds just can't seem to get rid of that hoodoo. You know, if I'm honest with you, Dom, I thought we're the better team against West Ham, but we still came out without anything. It just does seem to be a bit of a hoodoo / curse down there.
Yeah, and if we look at Leeds' season so far, like, I'm hearing different things from different Leeds fans I speak to. You know, I've got a few mates who are Leeds fans, and, you know, I know a few people through work who are Leeds fans. But what is your opinion on the season so far? Is it going better than you expected? You know, not even really ever been in a shout of being in a relegation battle? Or were you actually hoping that, you know, it's not the quality in the Premier League this season, you know, from the bigger sides hasn't been amazing? I'm talking about the likes of Arsenal, the likes of, you know, Spurs and teams like that. Are you thinking at points that we should have done better, or is it its first season up? Just consolidate our place in the league, and then next season is when we can really push on.
Yeah, to be honest, Dom, I look at it, and Fulham's a sort of metric which I've been comparing it to through for a lot of people, really. I mean, your bench and your team still is miles ahead of Leeds. It's miles ahead. I look at your bench and I think, wow, you know, and obviously you've been in the Premier League, you've been relegated, you've been up, you've been down, sort of yo-yoing sometimes. And I think obviously with parachute payments, been able to make the squad better. And obviously we know you've had sort of egos in the squad that you've had to get rid of, but Fulham have always had that money side of it. And I think that's been a massive benefit to Fulham and to other clubs like West Brom are another example. Leeds have been solely out of the division for 16 years. We've had no money piled into us or anything. So we've still got the existing players that really, like I was saying earlier, have been with us for 4 or 5 years now, and Bielsa's just improved them and made them better. To just put an understanding on it, Dom, we've had 15 different centre-back partnerships this year. 15. It was the 15th at the weekend. And To do what we've done with the amount of injuries we've had 4 under 23s on the bench pretty much near on every single game. And that's, you know, when you look at the squad depth, that's where you look at a Fulham where you look at a West Brom, even, you know, our relative comparatives, really, we can't even compete on a squad value level at this moment in time per player with you guys, especially in wages. So what we're actually doing is phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. We shouldn't be anywhere near, you know, in terms of, as I keep saying, squad value, transfer value, for the majority of our squad, we're on par with Sheffield United. That's the level we should be at. We should realistically be at 19th, 20th place. But what Bielsa's done is, it's incredible. And I think from now on, obviously, I think we're going to stay in the division now. I think 36 points is definitely enough. But next year, it's going to be a real project. And I think Leeds are going to build and build and build and get stronger and stronger.
Yeah, I think this game, especially if you look at the tail, is a game that means a lot more to us than it will to you guys. I mean, if we end up getting a victory, it's a huge result for us. And you guys, it's all right, but then you can go next week. Whereas we really need to, after they lost to Manchester City, we really need to, this first game we've probably been outclassed in the game in a month or two, really. I think the Leicester game was probably the last time we were outclassed in a game. So I think we really are looking to bounce back in this game. And that's where I think you guys could pounce, is that the pressure is kind of off you guys. The pressure is more on us to come out and get the result as opposed to it is on you. But obviously, there's always pressure when you've got all the Leeds fans wanting to be as high up the table as you can. But for one last question, if I can push you for a score prediction for the game, Connor, what are you going to go with?
Do you know what? It's strange, but I think any point in the Premier League is a good point. And I am going to go with a 2-2. I think we'll score first, but I think you're going to break that hoodoo. And I think you're going to come back and it's going to be 2-1. And then Leeds are going to equalise with about 10 minutes to go, because we are very, very good in the last 15. It's just the energy and endeavour of our side. So I'll go for a Desmond, Dom.
Thank you very much to Connor and, of course, Dom for doing that opposition preview. As ever, if you want to watch the full chat, head over to the Fulhamish YouTube channel, subscribe now, and you can watch the full opposition preview. And also, you'll be able to get Jack and Joe's latest SW6 Essential and, of course, Full Time Live, which is live after every match. Let's look ahead then to the lineups that we might be seeing on Friday against Leeds. And almost certainly there'll be a few changes, Jack. He brought in Scott, your triple pivots that you wanted with Lamina, Reed and Anguissa on Saturday against City. But I would expect there to be a few changes and maybe a return of probably Josh Maguire, but maybe Alexander Mitrovic.
Yeah, I wanted the triple pivot against City and it worked really well for 45 minutes and then it didn't work very well for the other 45 minutes. So,
It was a good suggestion, really. It was never designed to try and come back from 1-0 down against Man City, was it? It was supposed to contain, and you can't mitigate necessarily for those kind of mistakes. So no. It was a good suggestion. So well done. I hope you're getting your check in the post.
Yeah, well, I think Scott's listening. We've moved from 5 to 4 at the back, and no, I'm joking. But I'm interested to see what Scott does actually on Friday night, because I think there's a couple of ways you could approach this. There's, you know, you could stick with the same, the midfield three, try and stifle and really try and kind of shut Leeds' energy down, because I actually think that Fulham's best bet in this game actually might be to slow it down a fair bit, because Leeds will want to play at breakneck speed for large parts of it. And I actually don't think that'll suit us hugely. I think Fulham might actually want to stodge in a little bit and slow this game down if we're to really get ourselves going, because I think at 200 miles an hour, this game might get away from us in some way. So I'd be interested to see if Scott sticks with it, because I think he might. Just because of the way that works. I think we'll see a high press. When I spoke to John earlier in the week, he said the one thing that Bielsa's always said about Parker is that he's actually outmaneuvered him, even though he's lost a couple of times to him in recent times. And I think actually we look back at not just the 4-3 where it was all a bit mad and manic, but the 3-0 loss at Leeds when we came back from lockdown right at the start of that period last year. Fulham were the better side for 45 minutes, for quite a long period. For the majority of the first half, and then and actually just sort of got blown apart on the counter. Now, obviously, Fulham are a better defensive unit than they were, well, not only then, but also in the reverse fixture earlier this season. And it'd be interesting to see how Parker lines that up to kind of face off against Bielsa, because, you know, we've talked about this a couple of times. This isn't their first matchup. This isn't their first rodeo. And we've always said, oh, we'd be a bit concerned about how Parker matches up against someone like Marcelo Bielsa, who is doing a remarkable job. And I think actually interestingly, when you look at a lot of fan channels and when you look at a lot of the combined lineups, the combined 11s that people put out for Fulham and Leeds, you probably see slightly more Fulham players than Leeds players in there these days. And I think that speaks volumes to not only the fact that Fulham have put together a good squad, but also that Marcelo Bielsa is doing an incredible job with a side that is basically Sheffield United with Rafinha. I don't mean that with any disrespect to Sheffield United.
Are you trying to get Leeds fans in your mentions? Is that what you're trying to do?
No, I'm being incredibly positive about Marcelo Bielsa, as usual. I think the man is a genius, and I am, as you know, a full-on Bielsa acolyte. I think he's doing an absolutely phenomenal job at Leeds United. And I just think that he's been made to do that with a squad which I still think is majority championship caliber. I think you look at it and look at that in genuine. How many of those players do you put into the Fulham squad right now? I don't think the answer will be many. I really don't. So when you look at it like that, I think not only does it show how good Bielsa is, but also the fact that Parker has matched up against him and has done well on numerous occasions. And now I'm interested, now that Parker perhaps has a squad that is as good, if not better than Bielsa's, how he then tries to maneuver this game to manipulate that in his favour. So I think we'll see that high press. I think it will be Lookman, Madja, and maybe, well, one of Cavaleiro and Bobby Reid on that other side. I'm interested to see if the midfield three is stuck with or if it's Ruben Loftus-Cheek that comes in to play that 10 role. I think the back four or the back five will pick itself in many ways because, well, we haven't seen too many changes. I don't think we're going to see Anthony Robinson recover his spot. But if he does, it's not a huge, huge blow or anything. That's just the way that it's worked a couple of times. So yeah, I think we'll see a very, very press-heavy front three because that's what's put Leeds under pressure this season. I'd be interested to see if we play with the 10 or 3 midfielders who sit and make it stodgy like we did against City. And I mean, yeah, the defence picks itself. It doesn't really matter who plays in defence, does it? We trust them all now.
Yeah. Peter, do you imagine Madja comes back in? I did see something about how Leeds have conceded the most headed goals in the division this year, which obviously would make you inclined to think that Mitrovic would do well. And of course, that's who Mitrovic scored against last.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I actually think this could easily be a game for Mitrovic to start. Obviously, we haven't seen him for quite a while now. He got a considerable amount of time against City, almost as though he's trying to build up some minutes with something in mind. I feel like the way Leeds defence set plays, I feel like their vulnerability aerially at the back, as you just mentioned, Sammy, is something that Fulham will want to exploit. I think they work very effectively at Elm Road. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him come in. I still, Josh Madja's come in and he is still young. He's still lacking in that Premier League experience. And I don't think his aerial game is going to be as effective, obviously, as Mitrovic. So I think there's a case there definitely for him to come in. I feel like with the way Leeds play, you're going to favour your one-on-one players. So you're probably going to favour someone like Cavaleiro, probably someone like Anguissa in the middle. Because once you lose your man against Leeds, you've got an overload. And making sure that Fulham can build on those and take advantage of them in forward areas will be key. I think I'd imagine that Scott Parker will stick with the four, just because of the imperative of needing to win. And the way Leeds play in terms of matching players up, I think having an extra player in advanced areas because they always have a spare man at the back, don't they? So, interesting. I definitely think that's going to be the thinking, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Mitrovic come in. I don't think you'll need that sort of fluidity that Madja can bring instead.
Great. All right. Well, we'll see what happens on Friday night against Leeds. All that needs to be done before we finish the podcast is reveal the answers to your questions, Peter. So we'll see if Jack gets 3 out of 3. He's supremely confident that he will. I'm fairly sure he will as well, annoyingly. I really want him to not get 3, but I just don't think that's going to happen here. But let's know your scores once Peter's given the answers at Fulhamish Pod. It'll be interesting to see how you get on. So what have we got? Question number one.
Yeah, number one was the club's question. So what clubs have said player played for? And the player in question was Scott Parker. So he's played for Charlton, then went on loan somewhere, then came back. Then it was Chelsea, Newcastle, West Ham, Tottenham, Fulham. And he went on loan to Jack?
Norwich City.
Correct.
It was there in Newcastle were the only two clubs he played outside of London. And they both began with N. That was another quiz question somewhere once.
I thought that would be a question that no one would get. Because for me, it was so, you know, I just didn't see it. You know,
do you remember when he scored that goal against Norwich in the Championship, Sammy, from the edge of the box? It was an absolute
Premier League.
Oh, it was a wonderful goal. It was still when he was 28. He was wearing the 28 shirt still at the time. He scored a lovely goal from the edge of the box. And they referenced it in the commentary afterwards.
I had no idea on that one and just guessed Millwall because I thought the London connection. Respect. But yeah. I was thinking it was too obvious when I gave the answer, which should have been my clue.
Actually, I should have put another London club, really. See, Gillingham, you know, they're not too far away from Charlton.
Also, Fulham and Gillingham's relationship is rocky, to say the least, given previous events.
That would be known, yeah. Okay, and the next question was who scored in a 1-0 victory. This game was Fulham 1, Galio Athens 0, Intertoto Cup, third round, July 2002. Jack?
Louis Saha was the goal scorer.
Very good.
Again, I had no idea, but went Steve Marley because I remember that Steve Marley, he didn't really have a prolific spell for Fulham. That was kind of the problem. But if there was one time where he scored a few goals, was the kind of beginning of that season in the Intertoto, but a full-on guess. You mentioned it last night on the quiz, Peter. Are Regalio Athens still a club?
I'm Googling it.
I mean, this is the kind of thing I'd have thought Jack might have just been able to...
They are still a club, but they don't play in the older divisions that you'd know about anymore. They're like a Dnipro. They just like played like well below where they used to be. Once had some European success, or success in this case losing to Fulham in a year we won the cup, and they play in like the Greek third tier, or I think it might be the second tier, actually. No, third tier in Greece.
Third tier. So they play in the feeder league to the Super League 2, so they are no longer at the heady heights
of the Intertoto. And question number three.
Okay, how many Americans have played for Fulham in the Premier League? How many, Jack?
So there have been 11 players that have played for Fulham from America. I don't think that Luca Della Torre, Emerson Hyndman, or Marcus Hanneman have played in the Premier League. So I would go 8. And my favourite one of these is Eddie Lewis, who was Fulham's second ever American. And he made one appearance against Blackburn in the last game of the season where Fulham came up.
Has just turned into Jack flexing, hasn't it?
I mean, it's a little bit horribly. Yeah, I'm very upset. And he even got that bloody bonus question about Tom Kearney working in the Barclays Bank, which he'd have had absolutely no right to know. He just guessed it.
Look, sometimes it all comes up, sometimes it doesn't. So, you know,
Let us know how you did with Peter's questions at Fulhamish Pod. Thank you to my guest today, Peter Rutzler, Quizmaster Peter Rutzler.
No, thank you. Thank you, Sammy. That's my quiz mastering days over, I think.
Although it is going up on The Athletic this week, isn't it?
Yes, it's going up tomorrow. So you can do the full quiz. It'll be published on The Athletic tomorrow.
Fantastic.
And the triumphant Jack Collins, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sammy. Happy belated St. Patrick's Day to everybody listening to this. It's been a good one.
Great stuff. All right, we will be back on Sunday looking back at the Leeds game. I believe I'm going to be hosting, and Jack and Loz, who you may know from their wonderful blog that they write after each game, are going to be guests on the podcast. Fingers crossed, all going smoothly. So yes, Jack and Loz should be joining me on the podcast on Sunday, so definitely one to check out. Have a good weekend. Hopefully we can do the business on Friday. Come on, you whites.